Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome again, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the ASSC Direct Podcast Show. Hey, today we got a really good show today. Excuse me. We'll be talking about coping with depression and suicidal ideation. And, you know, this is something that, you know, a lot of people, you know, may have faced or dealt with at some point in their lives, especially after dealing with a narcissist, I would assume. And, you know, in many of these cases, a lot of people don't really know what signs of depression may be. They may not know what the signs are, and they may not exactly know what has come up on them to have them feeling, thinking, and acting in a different way that's uncharacteristic of themselves. So I want to, and today I have a special guest, inspirational speaker, Dan Pelly, who's going to be tuning in here. And we're going to be discussing some topics and going in depth on some things dealing with depression and suicidal ideation and those things of the sort. So without further ado, I'd like to bring Mr. Dan on, Mr. Pelly. Dan, are you there?
I am here, Quinn. How are you this evening?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
Doing great. Doing great. Alive and kicking.
It's good to have you on, man. It's good to have you on. What you consider yourself inspirational. You have a very inspirational story yourself, man, and the things that you've been through, and now you're helping so many people, you know, stay afloat. You know, you're giving them that push and that courage to stay in the fight. And that's what I like to call it. I like to call it staying in the fight, because a lot of times when people go through things, they almost want to give up. You know, they want to kind of like throw in the towel and say, you know, I had enough. I can't do it. Nothing's going to get better. I can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And they want to, you know, they want to jump out of there, you know. And I think what you're doing, and with the knowledge that you provide for people to, you know, get themselves back on track and get out of a situation that has brought them down to that point, especially, like I said, if they've dealt with, you know, something severe or traumatic in their lives, you know, especially after dealing with narcissists, especially, you know, people tend to lose themselves and go into this state of depression and things of the sort. So I'd like to turn it over to you and kind of, you know, let you introduce yourself, you know, and we'll go from there and pick your brain and you know, get some calls from the callers as well on coping with depression and suicidal ideation. So without further ado, Dan, go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone that's on right now.
I'd just like to say hello to everybody. I'm Dan Pelly, inspirational speaker, suicide warrior, and I'm all about the inner battle and choosing life. And I learned the hard way. I made the two biggest mistakes in my life in 1996 and 2010 after some traumatic incidents in my life. And not that we want to take the easy way out. We just want to rid ourselves of the pain that we're suffering with. The pain becomes so severe, it's like an 800-pound gorilla on your back. And coming from experience, and, you know, I don't like to really get into details about the act itself because I'm always cautious that it might trigger somebody. I like to take the different approach that, okay, if someone's listening that's really at that moment, and that moment can become very dark and lonely, and trying to decide, you know, do I do this, or it's something that's irrational, and you have all these ideas going on and the suicide ideation, and you think, this is the answer, right? This is the answer. I'll end this pain. And that's exactly what I was in. And I never got depressed in my whole life, always a go-getter, still a go-getter. And when I became sick, you know, after a divorce, a business loss, a move, you never should be doing everything all at once. That's one valuable lesson I learned when you're suffering. The suffering happens. You know, we get heartbroken. We start breaking down, especially, like you say, listening to you about narcissists. I've learned so much from you, how to identify a narcissist and the lack of empathy they have, and they will like literally laugh at people that are hurting, and I'm always fighting back every day. It's all about the fight every second, because it's very easy to lose ourselves and say, I'm done. We lose ourselves to a point of human nature. And, a lot of people that don't understand suicide, it's like, okay, it's a chicken way out. Hey, you're copping out. Look, I grew up with a tough Italian father. I'm not the toughest guy on the block, but I grew up with a lot of tough guys. It's not about toughness at all. It has nothing to do with being tough. Yes, do you want to have courage and hope? Might be your last line of defense. Your last line of defense is going to be your determination and your courage and the hope that you hold on to, that I have to take the actions to move myself out of this heavy depression that I'm in. My depression gradually built up. First it's heartbreak. First you're suffering. And you think, okay, I'll get over this in a week or two. And before you know it, in 96, it became full-blown depression. Now I'm not really interacting anymore. I'm isolating. I'm being secretive. I'm starting to think about suicide, and it's constantly happening. So no matter what thoughts you have about suicide, whether people are going to take the severe route with a gun, which usually is the most deaths in suicide, there's 45,000 people in the United States killing themselves, and there's 800,000 worldwide. It's an epidemic. The Surgeon General, put it on the 15th leading causes of death in 2000. I was very glad to see that when I started writing programs about this. And, it's now the 10th leading cause of death. It was at number 8 at one point, but that doesn't mean what number it sits at. There's a lot of suicides going on, and the suffering, the quick fix, not happening in society. The more we've gotten in this world, the less satisfied we've become. Almost want to go back to the old days where you're just toughing it out, humbling out. The more luxury we've gotten, we can't cope with the loss of things that happen and just really be you and really see who you are. I lost myself. I lost myself and everybody else, taking care of everybody else, fighting for everybody else instead of fighting for myself. So as the 96 events happening, now I got clinically depressed. This is a very real problematic situation. Once you become clinically depressed, it's a whole different level where you're constantly thinking about suicide. This is all you think about day in and day night. Either you're going to be impulsive, you're going to do something quickly, means of guns or jumping or pills or whatever it is. Mine was pills, but it doesn't, like I said, I don't get into the whole detail and the drama of it. Even though I made a video of it, people like the shock and awe. The regular person, they have some empathy, but they see it and say, "Well, I got to listen to this." And that's why they listen.
Really quick,
I want people
Dan,
to listen. Really, good.
Really quick, Dan, not to cut you off. Can you the listeners on, and can you walk them on through the stage? Because you mentioned the clinical depression. Can you walk them through the stages of the different levels of depression to where it gets to clinical? Like, is there a first stage and a second stage, and then you end up clinical? Or okay.
Yes. It shifts on you because, I'm down. Okay, I'm down and out. I'm a little depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm moving still. I'm doing my thing. And then all of a sudden, the depression deepens. Now your chemicals might become imbalanced in your mind. Your serotonin, there's certain things going on with chemicals. People say, I don't want to go to therapists or doctors. They're lousy and all that. Look, and I have my bad share of psychiatrists and doctors when I got sick. And I was going to every spiritual leader I could find. And I was running everywhere instead of looking within. But as that depression kept building, and as it got clinical, my chemical imbalance got worse and worse, and then it becomes clinical. So your depression deepens. Your isolation gets more constant. Now you stop washing. You stop eating. You're not eating properly. You feel like a truck has run you over every day. Your body physically takes a beating when you're clinical. And it gets to the point where you're just giving up all hope. You just feel like I'm never, ever going to get better again. Now that I became sick for the first time in my life, ran in my family very little. So it's not like it's all our genetics. It's a slew of things happening. it affects you, it shifts your chemical balance, and now you're in a problematic situation. In 96, I didn't reach out for help as quickly, and I was afraid to ask for help because of the stigma and the shame and the guilt that you're thinking about checking out. And especially for the men. Any men that are listening, that's a real problem for men because society says, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, be tough. Yeah, you don't need pills. What are you doing this for? It's not that easy of a solution. So as it built up for 6 months, and I'm very grateful and I'm blessed that I'm still here because I should be gone from the attempt that I had. And my second attempt occurred in 2010. I'll speak about that in a minute. But as we walked through these steps, by 4 to 5 months that went by, that's all I thought about 24/7. It was, how am I going to check out? Now, I don't want to do it this way or that way. I don't want my family finding me this way. And people say, well, you got to think of your kids. You got to think of your family. Of course I love my family. I love my kids. And it had nothing to do with that. When I was writing my notes and I was sitting there, I was crying futilely. And that the pain was overwhelming. I wanted to end the pain. And as I got to the point where I was going to go to that dark moment and act out, it's the most horrific moment of anybody's life. And anybody, wow, that has committed to, and anybody that has committed suicide, I know that. I know right before they either pulled that trigger or did those pills or jumped from that bridge, I know that deep, dark feeling they had. And they lost all hope, and it drains out of you like all your blood is drained out. This is a
so
very...
in that instance, good, Dan.
No, what I was going to say, when I got to that moment, I call it the moment. And if no one's ever got to that moment, you really can't identify with it because you've never been there. Yeah, people get depressed. They get down. People have thought about it. They say 98% of the people, it has passed their mind about checking out. But it's a quick passing. It's a thought, hey, I'm going to keep moving. When it becomes ideation and that's all that's happening are the people that say, I can't believe he or she did it. It's one of the common lines I hear constantly. When someone has checked out, I can't believe he did it. He didn't seem like he was all right because they live in secrecy because the society puts so much shame and stigma. And that's why I stand very strong about, you know, not too many people are going to say to me to my face that I'm a chicken or that I took the easy, you know, I was trying to take the easy way out. I was copping off from my responsibility. I'm the most responsible guy. I've raised families. I've done it all. I've had a lot of life experiences. And now I'm advocating, you know, my goal is a big goal. I'm looking to reduce the suicide rate by 33%. It's a big goal. It's a big goal in my heart, but I'm determined, and I want to reduce it because we have a lot of organizations. There's so many organizations out there, and they do a fantastic job. There's other people advocating and speaking, and everybody's contributing, but the suicide rate's not going down. So I don't know what the problem is or if there's too much on the awareness and not enough for treatment. More money goes to this or that. Something's going on in our inner battle, whether it's spiritually, even if you're an atheist, that you're finding purpose in your life. And we talked about that, you and I, about people finding purpose. I had no more purpose in my life. And you know what became my biggest purpose when I got sick and I did my attempt? Was myself. And loving myself. For the first time in my life, to really love myself as a human being, to never take that drastic step again, and vowed that I never would again. But got to be very careful with depression because it's a wretched animal. It's a wretched animal that gets to you, and it will sneak up on you, and it will grab onto you, and it won't let go.
That's such a powerful statement right there, Dan. I mean, and just for the view, the listeners online tonight, we're the discussion we're talking about coping with depression and suicidal ideation tonight. And guest speaker, inspirational speaker, Dan Pelly is our guest tonight. And you know, one of the things he mentioned is, you know, how depression can grab a hold to you when you come out of something. And I think it's important that people do become aware when they're depressed and not to just write it off, you know, to actually, you know, and that's the thing you said, Dan, a lot of people don't want to go seek out help because it's like they don't take it maybe serious enough, or they feel like, oh, I'll be good. Who wants to hear my problems? I'll be all right.
And it's embarrassing.
And they don't say anything. Right. And it gets worse, right? It gets worse over a period of time.
It just creeps up on you more and more. And when I was at my full-blown stage in November '96, and I came to that day that I decided to do it, and it was just, I was in a hotel, and I looked at the corner of the room, and in just a little corner of the room, I'm like, this is it, Dad? This is what it's come to? And I mean, I'm talking very fluently right now. If you saw me then, I wasn't speaking like this. I wasn't speaking at all. And I was head down, and I was ashamed, and I was embarrassed, and I walked around with guilt all the time. You know, there's a real problem. There's so many combinations going on. We talk about people. So when I made that act, I did it. I didn't die, obviously. When I got into the IC unit from ingesting, the doctors were very angry at me. They're like, what did you do? I told them what I did. It's just an enormous amount of pills, okay? And I don't even want to get into the number. But he said, you did what? And he got to the point where he's like, okay, I think you're going to accomplish what you want to accomplish, because it's over 48 hours. You're going to have a real problem with your kidneys breaking down and your liver breaking down. We're going to try to save your life, because that's what we do here. We save lives. We don't take life. And he was pissed. 3 days in the IC unit, total hallucinations, total in-depth into trying to save my life now. Now, I wanted to die so bad after everything that happened over a year. I was just wanting to die so bad, and then I couldn't believe the transition that it's good that when someone survives, it turns, and now you want to live so bad. And they kept telling me that I'm going to die. And I kept signing papers, and I'm like, no, 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 I want to live. Well, you know, you did what you did, and we're going to do our best to save your life. So my kidneys, fortunately, no problems. My liver, blessed, you know, for everything that's happened to me in this whole ordeal of my life that came late in my life. But when I did start pulling out of it in the IC unit, they were looking at me like I was a walking miracle. They said, anybody else, what you did would drop a horse. You mean, there's no way. We just can't even believe the turnaround and your blood levels and everything that's happened to you. And that's when I decided, I said to myself, never again, Dan. And I went to a college course. I started getting into psychology more. I wrote a 33-page program on suicide. And I've been helping people all along. I really went mainstream the past 3 years. And it just, I had a breakthrough, more guilt, even after all these years. I had a breakthrough guilt to be able to talk like this and have the boldness and the courage to say, no, hey, look, at they say this is a disease. It is a disease. When you have cancer, what do? You go for treatment, right? When you have a problem and you're having a sickness, you go for treatment. So why not, when someone's depressed, it's not like pull yourself up with bootstraps. Hey, you got to get some help. You need to get your chemical balances right. Now, there's some people that are killing themselves because of illness. You know, they're on death's door, euthanasia, whatever's going on in other countries. You know, I stand for the dignity of life. I will never, never take my life with my own hand. Even if I become stricken with cancer, hope I never do like that. Even if I did, I would live out my suffering that way, because in the end, your suffering becomes your enlightenment. Forever, we're going to carry on. And that's how I see it. And I see that once we start taking that road, the taking life, and you know, the abortion issue is a whole different deal, and everything's going on. Once we go down that slippery slope of euthanasia, we're going down a slope that we have no return. And I stand for that dignity of life. I get in a lot of debate about this, but I stand strong on it. I stand tall on it. And this is what I believe. We can't go down that road. I'd rather go to the positive side of choosing life than ending it. Right to the
Absolutely.
Last moment.
I mean, powerful statement there, Dan. I mean, that's one thing I think a lot of people can take from that and should have that same type of, you know, mentality about living. You know, there's so, you know, and it's not just to sound cliche to say there's so much to live for, but there's always a positive somewhere to take from something when you're going through something to that extreme. And I want to get to the lines, too. I know we got people that probably want to ask questions. Again, tonight we're talking about coping with depression and suicidal ideation. Not necessarily if you thought about it out there, but if you have felt a little down or if you felt a little off from what you have been, you know, tonight is a good time to ask. Well, I have Mr. Dan Pelly on tonight, and, you know, I'm going to go to the lines. I got 917 on. Come to 917.
Hi, Quinn.
917.
Hi, Dan.
How you doing?
Hello.
I'm good. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi. I'm calling from the DMV area. Thank you for sharing your story, Dan. Thank you, Quinn.
Oh.
I've never had a thought about suicide, but I have been diagnosed with depression several years ago, and it was after dealing with a narcissist. But at the time, I didn't know about narcissism. Mm. And prior to me dealing with a narcissist, I've had a lot of abandonment issues from my biological parents. So when the narcissist and I broke up, it kind of triggered my feelings that I had when I was younger with my parents abandoning me. And I didn't know that I was depressed at first because I just thought that I was sad, but because my heart was broken. But I started to realize that I was depressed when I wasn't eating and I wasn't sleeping. My close friends and some of my family members started to notice that I just didn't look like myself anymore. I didn't put myself first, and I always had pretty good confidence. But at that time, because I didn't have an appetite, I didn't even realize that I was losing weight until the point where I went to the doctor, and I had to be prescribed on Ensure for a meal replacement because I couldn't keep anything down. But I've never been diagnosed with, like, bulimia or anorexia, but I just didn't have the desire to eat. I was eating my emotions.
And do that.
Go ahead, Quinn.
Go ahead. I mean, I was asking, through that period, I mean, through that, through when you were going through that, and maybe if you have a question you want to address to Dan, when you weren't eating and whatnot, and when you felt yourself getting to that point, did you know you had to do something drastic to come out of that, or did you just thought you could wing it and get out of it and it'll bypass itself?
I thought that I could do it on my own, but to be honest with you, aside from my friends, I stumbled upon a channel, the Word Network, you may have heard of this, Quinn or Dan, and I stumbled across a pastor. And it's like the TV, the channel turned, and it was like a perfect timing because I heard a message that made me snap out of it, just saying that, you know, you're better than this. You know, God doesn't want you to feel like you're forgotten. Love yourself, and he's going to lead the path, et cetera, et cetera.
That's awesome. That
resonated with me, and I was able to regain my strength and, you know, do away with the narcissist. So I'm happy about that.
Well, you know,
Dan, you
want to
add anything?
Throw up. Well, I was going to say narcissists definitely want to make us throw up when we deal with them. You know, I think, you know, like, I want to be clear about depression too. It's not everybody gets suicidal. There are a lot of people walking around with depression, dealing with depression, medicating, whatever they got to do to keep themselves kind of balanced in life and keep fighting on. So sometimes they will never think of suicide, like yourself, and they just don't go to that level. And it doesn't mean every individual is different. The chemicals change in your mind, things happen, but all the symptoms that you had, everything that was happening with you is exactly what was happening with me. The problem is when I got clinical, the mind really started playing havoc on me, and it started controlling me instead of me controlling it. And when you speak about like inspiration and things like that, someone sent me a determination quote back in 2008. They had a second attempt in 10, and no, it was after that. It was 11. But he sent me an inspiration quote about being determined. And I put that up in front of me, and I still have it in front of me 10 years, you know, 9 years later. It's about your determination. Like you found that spark with the pastor, and it happened for you, and you were a seeking spirit. I wish everybody that was suicidal could find that. And this is why I'm out here. I want to say one word, one sentence for someone to say, I'm going to hold on. I'm not going to let go. I'm going to hold on one more day. Because here's the thing. When I held on, I realized that time, not that I wasn't getting help, and I started seeing doctors. I got on Zoloft. I got on two or three meds in 96. Yeah, it numbs you out a little bit. You don't feel all your feelings, but it keeps you safe. And I didn't have all the great therapists or psychiatrists, but I made sure I found the people I was comfortable with. I found people I was comfortable with. And once time started going by and I kept holding on, things started changing, but it wasn't without taking action. You know, I have a person I know, and he has been in his room, and I've talked to him many times through the past years, and he stays in his suffering. He won't commit suicide because he's too afraid to. I said, good, stay scared. But he's not taking the action to come out of his room. For 20 years, this guy's been sick. But he's not taking the action. And I talked to him about action. And he just doesn't pull himself out of the room, and he lives with his parents. And these things are happening with him. And I'm like, if you don't take action, because no matter how many people inspired me, no matter how many meds I took, or no matter how many people were supporting me, it really came down to my inner determination that if I don't get out of bed, because in 96 I was in bed a lot, but in 2010, my stepdaughter almost died from a car accident as a passenger. She took a head injury in 07. After we got her back on her feet, she suffers with a TBI. She's older now, but it just rocked our family to the core. Everything was going along so well. You know, I lost an older brother in 04 after my dad. And just the sufferings that happen in our life. You know, we suffer what we need to suffer, but we got to enjoy what there's to enjoy. But when this happened to her, even though I fought like a lion to get her back in shape with her mother as best we could, when that was done and she was back on her feet to a point where she was healthy enough, I totally deflated in life again. I got depressed. I felt like I had no more purpose. I got depressed again. It snuck up on me like the wretched animal it is. Before you knew it, I was clinical again, and I was suicidal again. 14 years later, I couldn't believe it. I said I would never do this again. But when you have no control and your mind is playing havoc on you and you get irrational, because it's a lot of, I think, you know, my personal opinion, when you're at that moment, it's an irrational decision. Some people say, I've dealt with some atheist groups, hey, someone has a right to want to end it and say, I'm done with this life. Sure, you can make that choice. No one's ever going to stop anybody that's living in secrecy that wants to go in a room and do something. You can't watch over somebody 24/7, even though I got all support from my family. You can't watch over everybody. You're going to have to look in the mirror and say, it's up to me to hang in there and say, I'm going to hold on. I'm going to hold on. And I never, ever, it's not because even before I ever had a suicide attempt that I would ever say that someone that has taken their life, that it was an easy way out, or this or that, or, you know, how could they do such a thing to their family and all that. I know, and even I know now that the pain, I just can't even explain the kind of pain that's involved. And you know from suffering from your breakup, suffering from things, that the pain's there for people. But when it gets to like an 800-pound gorilla just sitting on your neck every day, it's just relentless. And after 10, and when I got sick again, I stayed in bed for a whole year. My wife had to drag me out of bed to shower, to feed me. They put some food in me. I was hallucinating. I was on medication. I felt demons were around me constantly. She goes, you got to get out of bed then. And, of course, I'm Italian, so I'm stubborn. I don't want to get out of bed. And I'm like, no. If I stay here long enough, the pain will stop. If I hide under these blankets, all my troubles will go away. All my sufferings over my stepdaughter, my brother, everything will stop. If I just put the covers over my head a little longer. Here's the thing about when you stay in bed too long. Them minutes turn into hours, and them hours turn into days, and them days turn into months, and you think, just another day, just another 10 minutes. But the day came when I talked to one of my spiritual leaders, and he said he was almost suicidal 40 years ago, and he could never put his foot on the floor until he, you know, found his spirituality and everything happened to him. But the day I looked at my wife and I said to her, I got to get help again. I went to a recovery program for 6 months. I dragged myself there. I put my foot on that floor, and I did the short list in life, and I wanted to speak about the short list for someone that's out there. When I'm doing my videos and I'm talking and I'm all over the social medias under Dan Pelly, YouTube, Instagram, you look up Dan Pelly, you'll find me. But I know those moments that are happening in people's lives, when you're looking at the long list, like, oh, I got to get it all back together. I got to hurry up and get it back together and do my thing. Doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend, we talked about a short list. And here's the short list. Get out of bed.
Before you get into your short list, Dan, before you get into that short list, I'm going to go ahead and thank the caller for calling in. I appreciate your story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing that. Want to go ahead and give station identification again. We're talking about coping with depression and suicidal ideation. And if you're listening, tuning in every Wednesdays, you can catch the ASSC Direct podcast at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. All you have to do is dial in 347-945-5948, and you can listen and tune in live. And again, you were going into then, and you know, what you were about to say, just about the got me all my tongue twisted up now. Shortlist. the shortlist,
yeah,
of what you recommend. And if once you drop that, and then we're going to take another call, see who else has something that they want to say. I mean, we have a lot of people on the line right now.
Sure.
But good.
Well, the short list, you know, what I learned from my first experience 14 years prior to this, and now it's been 9 years, you know, I've been med-free since 2001. I was on five medications after my daughter got hurt. I was on five medications.
Wow.
I was in recovery programs. People that were worse off than me, I was on the fifth floor in the hospital. They were looking out after me for days, making sure when I'm shaving, and they watch over you, and you feel like, you know, like you're in a cage, right? You know, you feel like, what am I doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you want to get out, but, you know. And then I saw a big sign up. It said Winston Churchill and other people had depression. I'm like, well, look at all these great people that got sick, you know. And it doesn't mean your greatness is over, because we all have greatness. But the short list became so important to me because I was trying to get everything back together. And you can just, you know, I have so much passion for this because I helped a friend through it, although he had a heroin addiction, and I think I helped him for 4 or 5 years, and just one bad hit and he was gone at 53, and I miss him daily. But he came back into my life as an old high school friend, and I helped him, and he was carrying on. I thought he was doing better, but, you know, he just made a slip. But we talked about this short list because he was depressed and he wasn't getting out of bed. And he said, well, what is this short list then? You got to make a short one. You got to get up. You got to wash your body. You got to eat. You have to read. You have to go watch TV. Even when I was depressed, you got to take a walk. You got to do something. And I added up like just 4 or 5 things. Walk my dog, eat, read, watch a little TV, go lay down for another 2 hours. And this cycle kept happening. But before you know it, that short list became 6 things, 7 things. Now I'm getting a little bit more, you know, hope going. And I'm like, hey, this is,
you're on the roll.
I feel better, you know. I'm starting to get on a roll, but it was such a short list. I used to, like, a go-getter that's real successful. You're going to say, well, that's nothing. But it's everything to the person that's suffering. Because when I went to that recovery program for 6 months and I dragged myself there, and I was, like, looking at all these people that were sick, and I'm like, they're sicker than me. What do you got to have gratitude, Dan. You got no more complaints. You got to just stay here and go through the process. You got to go through the process. And start working my way off of meds was my goal, because I wanted to feel my feelings. I didn't want to be numb. I just wanted to stay safe. But, you know, they had about 10 flights of stairs at this recovery. I was so weak at the time in 10, 9 and 10. 10 was my worst year. It was even worse than 96. When I stayed in bed for a whole year, almost, I think almost a whole year it was, it was just excruciating to the family, the kids, and my wife and all that. But when that happened and I got to that recovery program, I looked at those 10 flights of stairs and I said, I'm going to start walking these stairs. I'm not taking the elevator. And I started walking those stairs, and I started going up those stairs, and it was excruciating. I mean, I'm in pretty good shape as a guy, and I play football. I've done it all. I got to the third set of stairs when I started, and I was exhausted. This is how weak you become when you're clinically depressed. And I started walking those stairs, but after 6 months, I was going up them stairs with a brisk walk. And I was starting to feel better, and I started encouraging other people. And I started showing them that with proof, you can come out of it. Even if you live with depression, which I don't suffer with depression right now, but I know it can sneak up on you any time. But some people live with depression. Not so. But as I moved out of the recovery program and the family started seeing me, this is the old Dan coming back. But it wasn't without action, and it wasn't without a lot of effort.
So that short list is definitely something that's definitely absolutely. I can see how that can definitely help out and help people to start small. You got to start somewhere, you know. So start small and then work your way up. Right. We're gonna go back to the line 443.
Sure.
Yeah. 443. You're on live. 443.
Hi.
How you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
What's your name?
Hi. Hi, Quinn. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Good. What's your name?
I'm good.
Robin.
Robin.
Wow. Hi, Robin. Hi. This topic really hits home for me. I've been suffering from depression, on and off. And what's so odd about it, I guess, I don't know, from recovering or trying to recover from 30 years of narcissistic abuse, it's the back and forth. You know, I have good days, I'll have good weeks, and then just when I think I'm doing okay, then out of the blue, I'll just hit a really bad patch, and it just it's going it's back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So it's been like this has been let me see for the past year since the actual breakup, the final like breakup, and I'm just wondering like is this normal, or I mean I'm getting concerned because I just don't feel like I got a good footing. You know, and I'm wondering, am I being realistic? Do I have unrealistic expectations? Is this is this a normal cycle of depression that I'll come out of, or am I going further and further down? You understand what I'm saying? Like it's like it's so back and forth. Like I feel like I'm never going to get it together.
A vicious cycle. No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I'll feel like really, really good, and like you know, and I have these goals set for myself, and it's like I'm functioning. I'm doing more than functioning. Like I'm traveling, and I'm doing things, but it's not enough. And like I'll have moments like with my kids, and when they go see their dad, and then I'll have these thoughts, and it's like it's just. And I go right back in that slump, and it's like logically I know better. Like I know that this isn't good for me, and I have no contact. Cause I mean, there's been like no contact whatsoever, not even
good
text, email,
good
nothing. But it's like none of that is helping. Like none of that is helping. And so I'm just wondering. I don't know what to do. I just don't know what to do because I feel like I'm just. I don't know.
Well, let me say this. First of all, when you're in that cycle, because I had the same cycles going on. I had breakups. I had the same thing happening. You know, you lose yourself. You're trying to find yourself again as a human being, who you are. But when that was occurring, what I learned, when I started feeling weak again, or I was confused, or things were happening, and, you know, I've dealt with narcissists in my life, and, you know, everything, even some, you know, family members. It could be anywhere down the line. But one thing I learned, don't be so hard on yourself when this happens. Don't be like you got to get it together so quickly or conquer the world. I had a real problem with, because we're the hardest on ourselves. You know, the hardest thing to do is love ourselves. Would you believe that? I mean, the hardest thing to do is love ourselves, because we love everybody else. We're putting out our energy. But when I started churning that love inwards, and I said, Dan, stop being so hard on yourself. That's what I say to myself. You're not perfect. You're a human being. It's okay that you messed up. It's okay you made a mistake. It's okay it's going to take you a little time to get out of that short list. No one's judging you. You're only judging yourself. Nobody's judging you. No one's looking over my shoulder and saying, hey, you know, get that short list, make it long. It's all in our mind. It's all in our mind. Our mind can play havoc on us. Like you said, you go back in. You're like, logically, I know I shouldn't be here. But your mind takes you there. This is when I started relying on my heart more, because the way I see my spirituality, I mean, now I grew up as a Catholic. I'm now a practicing Buddhist, okay? But I know it's the heart that matters. The heart is never, even though we get it broken, my heart has never brought me down the wrong path. My mind has. But when I started saying the heart that matters, because the one thing the narcissist hates about a person with heart, because they don't got any. They don't got heart. My father and mother, Italians, they brought me up with a lot of heart. My father was in charitable works. He instilled it in me. It's coming out even more and more. But the heart is everything. And it intimidates people when they see the passionate heart. What I learned, though, I have to have the heart for myself now. I have to love myself. I have to draw the line with family members. If I got to draw the line with certain people, that you are out of my trust circle. You are out of my circle of care and love. And I'll chant for you as a Buddhist, and I'll chant for you to be a better human being, even for the narcissist, and you're a better human being in your next life. But the point of the matter is you got to start concentrating on yourself totally and really say to yourself, I'm okay. You know, I'm okay. This is going to be okay. It might take a little time. They say up to 3 years after a breakup. It can be 1 to 3 years, some people longer. Now, if you're staying into a problem for 5, 6, 7 years, you got to start taking action. You got to move out of that pain. Because when I got fed up and I was sick of being sick of myself, you get sick of yourself. In my first divorce, I got sick of myself. I just got up one day, I was on a stream one day, I was looking at the stream, and I'm like, sun came out, I'm like, I'm all done thinking about her. I am sick
of thinking
about her.
Yeah, and that's how I feel.
Yeah,
and that's how I feel, Dan. I'm so tired of, and I'm thinking, I think part of it is my anger, because I wasted 30 years of my life. Like, I can't get that back. And he just moved on. He just, you know, and I'm just trying to like rebuild my life with these kids. And I think that the anger that I have is also kind of like fueling the depression, along with the fact that I know I shouldn't be here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, well, how long is this going to last? I think I'm looking for the end result. Like, I want to hurry up and, like, get through this. And it's taking longer than it should. Like, I'm mad at myself for even feeling like this over that piece of crap. You know what I'm saying?
I want to interject really quick.
No, go ahead.
The more you think about trying to force it to come, the more it avoids you. It escapes you. Sometimes you just got to go with the program. Just go with it and don't look for, okay, when am I going to be feeling better? Just that short list that Dan mentioned, take your short list and just focus on the short list and doing the things on the short list. And don't think about, okay, when am I going to start seeing? Go ahead, Dan.
Right. Well, you know, when I was walking down the street and I was all alone, and I, in 96 when I was suicidal and nobody gives a shit and only my family loves me, and I'm walking and I'm saying to myself, I'm really all alone in life. We come in alone, we leave alone. And it's like we have all these interactions in between. But the process, you got to be okay with the process. I was stubborn about that too. I was like, come on, get it right now, get it done. You're a taskmaster, Dan. You're supposed to be done with this. And that was like devastating to me. I couldn't change it. And I was control. You know, my father was very controlling, control factors, whatever's going on. And it's just like, okay, I'm going to control myself right out of this. Didn't work that way. Like Chris says, you know, you got to let go of the finished product. But I did want to say this about your 30 years. Okay. One thing I learned in my Buddhist practice, with all the sufferings we have in our life and all the happiness we come across and everything that's happened, no begrudging. When you stop begrudging and you stop doing that every day, a black cloud comes over your head and it stays there. And it's one valuable lesson I've been practicing now for 10 years. When you begrudge and complain, it's a never ending cycle. So when I see my mentors and my leaders, no begrudging. Yeah, we complain a little, we're human, but we don't do it too long. Because begrudging only takes you down that negative road. And that negative road could take you into depression. And that depression can take you into suicide ideation. And then you're gone. And then your family doesn't have you. Your kids don't have you. And you're not naturally leaving this world by illness or whatever happens in your life as you grow old. And it's not like we're trying to give up on our family. But like you said, you got kids. So your 30 years weren't all for nothing. Yeah, you were with a disgusting knock that you find out that you say, this person wasted all my time. But you have, how many kids do you have?
3.
Okay, I got 4. So you got 3 kids. It wasn't all wasted. It wasn't wasted. Yeah, on that narcissist it was, but everything else wasn't. And I think once you get to that point and you start, go ahead, Quinn. Go ahead.
No, you can finish that out.
No, so I was going to say, once you get into that cycle of saying, okay, I didn't see this, I didn't see this with this narcissist. I didn't see that this person has ill intent on me constantly and wants to see me suffer and go check out. And it's just like, okay, it happened. Like my stepdaughter said when I showed her an article before she got in that car and made the biggest mistake of her life. And we all make mistakes when we're younger. We were lucky. We skated through. She saw an article where 4 kids got killed in a drunk driving accident. The driver, all the passengers, 4 of them. I put that newspaper article up 3 weeks before she was hitting 16 in her permit. She looks at me and the mother. You know what she says to me? Shit happens. Yeah, shit happens in our life. And life can really suck sometimes. And it can really be wretched. You know, the devilish functions, they want to grab people by their ankles and they want to pull them down. And it's a constant, I was talking to Quinn about this the other day, it's a constant battle against good and evil. And then when it gets in your mind and it's there, I'm always towards the good. The devilish functions don't mess with me too much lately. Because they know. I chant like a lion. I get up like a lion. Yeah, I have my problems. I get down sometimes. But I know to get out of that bed now, and I get going. And that's the advice I give people. And, you know, I helped a young lady. I wanted to say this. I know we're running out of time. A 21-year-old woman in California, Sabrina. Her sister, Nicole, you know, she hung herself at 16 in the garage last March. She found me through Twitter. Devastated, family devastated. This kid was involved in an accident. She took some head injury. She had some depression going on. A lot of problems, okay? And now she starts watching videos on YouTube because there's some bad influences on YouTube about a guy showing kids how to make a noose and put it around their neck, but says don't do this at home. And you know, we've been contacting YouTube about them. We're running a campaign now. You'll see it on my Facebook page under Dan Pelley. I got my own Facebook page, you know, my public page. And if people can sign that for her, for Nicole, you know, it's Nicole's voice, we call it. It's Nicole's bill that we're going to bring it to the legislators to at least get some kind of control over these bad influences, which is an abundance on YouTube, to not allow it, just like they wouldn't allow this guy on TV. It's so important. It's so important because our kids today, you got kids, I don't know how old your kids are, but they're being influenced. And they're being influenced in a negative way. I helped a mother with an 11-year-old daughter that wanted to kill herself. 11 years old. The mother was ashamed. She said, I can't reach out for help, Dan. I'm embarrassed. I said, no, you need to reach out for help. Embarrassed or not, you need to find some adolescent therapist. You need to get your daughter there. This is a little over 8 months ago. Sent me a picture 4 months ago, her and her daughter, 11 years old, said she got the treatment she needed. She's no longer suicidal, and she's thriving. So our younger kids are being influenced heavily on the internet. But me and Sabrina are on a campaign. She's in Cal. I'm on the East Coast in Boston. We're going to make a difference. And we're going to stop something, like not control the internet. We're not talking about that. But, you know, they control TV. They do certain things. We're on this campaign because you got kids. Other people listening got kids. And we got to protect them. And I'm really passionate about this campaign we got going. And I hope people can sign and, you know, put signatures on it. Find me under Dan Pelley. But I wanted to say that because you had kids. And I wanted to bring it up. You know, for her. But, look at your kids and say, this is what 30 years got me here, the good part of it. You've got Robin, you got to look at the good side every day. That's going to help you move forward.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
And well said.
Thank
Robin,
you
thank you for your call.
You're welcome,
absolutely.
Robin. Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, that's you know, and that's one of the things, you know, that people, they can feel like, the whole world's crashing. I want to get to one more call. I know the lines is busy tonight. One more call. Call it 309, you're on live. 309, going once, twice. Okay, I'll move on to 510. I'll get to 510. 510, you're on live. You there? Hello? 510, come once, twice, let's skip on. Excellent. 267. 267, you're on live. And we got some stuff in the background, but can't hear anyone.
You got the TV show going on.
we're running down on time anyway. See if we get it one more in. 410. We're talking about coping with depression or anything like that. You want to speak or say anything? You're on live. 410. 410. Once, twice. We'll get ready to close it, wrap it down. We only got like 5 minutes left anyway, Dan. But excellent. Excellent show tonight. You want to leave any of the listeners out there with where they can reach you, how they can get a hold of you, anything like that?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, my situation now, it's just like I want to make it, I want to directly talk to the people that are, you know, everybody's listening for the education and all that, but the people that are really suffering and they want to check out, it's just when, you know, this is a very, like what I'm doing is very deep and intense, obviously. So I have to keep myself as healthy as I can because it can affect me sometimes when I hear these stories of Brina's sister or the lady with the young girl. I mean, when I hear people that have checked out, it affects me deeply. But it's very intense. It's very deep, just like we're in depression. But there is hope, and there is just a little bit of courage. You know, it's your last line of defense, your determination, your hope. Everything starts adding up that it's you. You're the one that's going to make yourself better. With some assistance, you might need help. You might need meds. You might need certain things. But spirituality, wherever it's going to take you, whatever it takes to inspire you, to get you to keep moving. My next video is going to be about keep moving. It's going to be very intense and deep about what we need besides the short list and keep moving in life. And I think it's very important. But I'm on YouTube, mm-hmm. anything under Dan Pelly. I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok now. I'm on Snapchat, Flickr. I'm all through the social media sites. You just got to punch in Dan Pelly. You'll find me if you want to punch me in on YouTube. And click on me and subscribe and like, and pass these videos along. Like I know with Quinn, I pass his narcissist videos along. I've helped so many people that weren't aware of narcissists. The way you're going to help, I saw that guy at work or that girl at work. She was so sickly. She didn't look well. She's in down. She's depressed. Send her a video of somebody that's advocating for suicide. Some people, like, they don't look at it. Like, I was talking to Quinn about this. They don't look at it until it hits home. Let's not wait till it hits home. Let's start helping other people in this world that if we collectively work together, we will drop this suicide rate. I'm not going to do it alone, 33%, but I'm going to be the captain and the general, whatever I got to be, to lead people to helping other people. Because you're going to know somebody within your family, within your friends, which are in your colleagues, and they're going to check out and think, I never thought that young person would do it. I never thought she was going to do it. Let's make no mistake. People are suffering silently, and don't be afraid to say to somebody, and I've gotten very bold about this, and I did it recently with somebody, are you thinking about killing yourself? And it kind of snaps them into attention a little bit, like, wow, no one's ever asked me that. Because it's a tough question to ask. But ask the question, have the conversation.
Hey, excellent. Well said. I mean, on that note, again, Dan, thank you for coming on tonight. I mean, very knowledgeable.
Thank you.
Inspirational speaker, dropped a lot of jewels tonight on listeners that, and my apologies for not being able to get to everyone. It's a lot of people on, but we may have to follow up again, do this again another time too as well.
Then, let's do it again.
But yeah, as Dan said, don't suffer in silence. Don't think that you're above getting help. If you need help, if you feel like you need help, if you feel like you're getting depressed or having suicidal ideation, thoughts of it, just reach out to someone. So there's always somebody that will be willing to help you. You can always, like Dan said, follow Dan Pelly, DanPelly. He's on YouTube. He's on Instagram. It always helps to especially someone to take the time to sit down, talk to you if you need help and you're really looking for help. Someone can help you. With that note being said, thank you all for tuning in tonight, listening. I appreciate all of you. And if you missed these episodes, you can always go over to the ASSC Group Network channel and you can listen to the recorded episodes, usually up the next day. And till then, everyone, have a good night. Remember, most importantly, love yourselves. And take care. Have a good one. Bye now.
Thank you. Thank you, Quinn.
Absolutely.